Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to this, the latest edition of the Delta 9 radio program. Recorded for you live from deep within the bowels of the Delta 9 building, somewhere amid the chaos of the Delta 9 complex. My name is Mike. Sitting across from me is Matt.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
We got a lot to cover today, so we better get started. What's on the agenda for today, Matt?
Well, I think we're going to talk about Monsanto. And what impacts they're having in our food supply, and why people should know a little bit about who that company is and what they do. And we should probably start out by pointing out we just got back from a March Against Monsanto rally in St. Louis, Missouri, the world headquarters of Monsanto, in which we went there. Let's see, it was October 12th, Saturday. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just in St. Louis, we should point out, too.
It was worldwide.
400 cities, it says on the website.
It's estimated that over 2 million people came out overall around the world.
Wow. I hadn't seen that yet. Wow.
Two million.
That's impressive. And I think you see more of the protest arm of this. On this particular subject, you see more in Europe. Because people seem to be more dedicated to the whole idea of pure, clean, natural food and don't mess with my food, right?
Right.
In Europe.
So we're a little more complacent here.
We are. I think we've become a little bit more like, well, we need to produce a lot of food, so if we got to change a few things here or there, I think people have started to say, well, maybe that's not so bad. And I think one of the things we're going to talk about today is some of the reasons why it just might be.
Okay, so for folks that don't know, Monsanto
Corporation
is a publicly traded American multinational chemical and agribusiness biotechnology corporation.
Yeah.
And it's headquartered in Creve Coeur, Missouri, which is where the march we went to took place.
Yep.
It was a beautiful day, and we were afraid it was going to rain, but it turned out to be a beautiful day, and I was pretty impressed with the turnout.
Yeah,
I guess people from that area weren't, but we were.
Yeah, I don't know how many you would guesstimate it as, and people can look at some of the photos that we took, and we'll put some in the video, and we've also got them out on the Google Plus page for Delta 9, and I've got them out on M. Garrett, too. But if you want to look and guess how big it looked in St. Louis, I mean, I would guess maybe 400. That'd be my ballpark, just from looking at some of the photos. Do you think that's high?
No, I think it's right at. I figured about 500, so.
Because it was long, you know what I mean? That's the part that's hard to see in the photo. You can see us all around the entrance to Monsanto and on every side of the street, and everybody's kind of spread out there. But what you can't see is the tail of people that kind of taper off in both directions. And then when we were marching down the street heading up towards the gate, you see this big, long, thin line of people, but you don't see how long it is, you know? So I just from looking at the photos, I mean, that was my best guesstimate, about 400.
Yeah, I figured about 500.
And it'd be great if there was, you know, 5,000 out there.
Yeah, there would.
And I think maybe part of that is that people just don't know why they should care, you know? Like, oh, well, so what are they doing?
Well, yeah, I don't think this is one of the, you know, really hot button issues for most people.
Yeah.
I think most people are unaware.
Yeah. It seems like it doesn't really rise to the surface of something that demands action. And I think part of the reason for that is that consumers don't know anything about what they've changed. I think if people were aware of the amount of genetic manipulation that's done in foods that they've been eating for 10, 15, 20 years, you know, and how much of it has actually been changed. If they could see visually when they go to the grocery store, like, oh, this has been changed and this hasn't, I think they'd be surprised at just how much, in fact, has changed. How much that Monsanto has changed. And let's just go into a little bit about what we mean there. We're not talking about changing the ingredients of foods that you buy. I mean, we're talking about changing the genetic characteristics. That is the core of life,
right?
You know, the DNA. We're talking about altering the DNA of organisms that that evolved on this planet to be the way that they are for a reason, and to be in balance with the nature that surrounds them. And what Monsanto has done is actually changed the DNA. So this is genetic engineering. This is not like crossing one plant with another in a natural pollination way and saying, oh, well, this is just a new kind of plant. This is different than that. This is going into the nuts and bolts of the organism itself, outside right. of nature completely.
Now, this is a whole level deeper than just a hybrid plant.
Yeah, I think a lot of people just think they're crossing characteristics naturally, and that's not at all what's occurring. They're actually tinkering with in laboratories with the genetic code and taking DNA from one organism that has nothing to do with another and implanting it into that organism in order to gain the characteristics of the donor organism. So, you know, an example is they might take spider DNA because it has a particular resistance to a certain chemical and put it into an eggplant. And the net effect of that is, well, who knows? We don't know.
We don't know.
Point.
And
like,
it's not,
I'm not going to sit
here
and
studied.
Tell you. Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and try to tell you I know what it does, but I know that it's like playing in a playground that we don't really know how to use. And
right.
we don't know what the downstream effects
right.
of that are.
Right, we have no idea what these do to us.
But they do. They literally take like something out of this. It could be out of a plant or an animal, an insect, and it has a particular geno characteristic that they need, a resistance to something. And they put it in your soybeans, you know, or they put it in your corn, or they put it in something else, and it actually changes the nature of that organism. And they don't want to really have the conversation about whether that's harmful or not. And that bothers me, too, about Monsanto, is that they don't want to have a public conversation about it. In fact, they shut
yeah,
down
exactly.
conversation there, at every opportunity.
You know, a great example is the Prop 37 issue out in California where there was an initiative yeah. on the ballot
right.
only to label the food that has in its ingredients
right.
somewhere a genetically modified organism.
Not to stop them from doing it, not to restrict them, not to tax them.
Just to tell
just
them.
Just to say to the consumer, hey, we want to let you know that they changed this.
So it leads the average person to wonder, if there's nothing harmful or nothing bad yeah. about genetically modified organisms, then why does Monsanto spend tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, to prevent us knowing?
Right.
Not even knowing what's in there, just knowing that there are foods in here that have been modified. It's not going to tell us what they've done to it. It's not going to say there's some corn in here that was spliced with bat DNA.
Well,
blah,
we
blah,
wouldn't
blah.
Understand it anyway.
Right.
You know?
Just to label that this food has been modified.
Yeah. Like, wouldn't you want to know? Like,
what's the big deal?
We took something out of a caterpillar and put it into your tomato. Like, that level of labeling. And we did it because it puts a firmer skin on the fruit and allows it to have a longer shelf life. Okay, that's what they did, and that's why they did it. Now, do I want to buy it? That should be your choice,
right.
I think.
And it's a choice because, like you said earlier, we don't know what the downstream effects are. So we don't know what these modified genetics do to us long-term, whether they cause cancers, whether there's an increase in other diseases. We don't know because
allergies.
We have not studied them.
Whether they interact with our vaccines in a different way.
You know, Monsanto was also behind that recumbent bovine growth hormone that they were injecting into cows. It was a hormone that was getting into people and changing the way, you know, people's bodies react when they ingested that. And we didn't find out about that until after a bunch of people had had ill effects from it.
Huh.
So it wasn't studied, and it entered into the food stream.
It makes me wonder, because you look around and we see kids that have like drastically more allergies than kids had when I was growing up. We've got kids that have a lot more emotional disorders in a way. I hesitate to use the word disorder, but I mean more aberrant emotionally, so that we have things called ADHD and we have all these behavioral sort of things cropping up that we didn't see as much of, not nearly as much of, in my opinion, in when I was growing up. And if you look at the upticks in certain cancers, the upticks in certain brain disorders, these are not little tiny stair step increases. These things are jumping in certain areas, and people who have been paying attention probably already know what I'm talking about. But, you know, like, we don't know the cause of these things, and until we do, we really should be trying to clean up all of our inputs, I think. Clean up the food, clean up our water, and watch all these things start to go away. Because the less toxicity you put into the biological organism of human, the less dysfunctions you're going to have, whether emotional, physical, neural. That's what I think. So we should know if they're changing things and if there's toxins and if there's a possibility that those might affect us, then we should be having conversations about that, right? That's the basis of democracy, is right. That we should be, the public should be informed, and the public should be able to say, well, here's what I think about it, and then the company can respond.
But that's instead, our right as consumers.
Like Monsanto shuts down the conversation. They don't want to have public conversations about these things. They sue the grocery stores and the distribution, food distribution outlets that want to label the food and let the consumer make the decision. And they sue other corporations that try to allow labeling of that on their products to try to make sure that nobody is telling you that this has been changed. Like that's the part that bugs me, is that it's an active campaign to keep the public in the dark so that they don't have a voice in the issue of their food supply changing, and changing in ways that may affect current generations and future ones. Like, I'm not saying that will happen, but I'm saying there should be a conversation. And the very fact that they shut down every attempt to have a public dialogue about these things is what disturbs me about Monsanto.
It comes down to Monsanto's out, and this might sound, you know, conspiratorial. They're out to control the global food supply.
Yeah. I don't think that's a conspiracy. Go ahead, though.
Yeah. Right now, I don't know the exact figure, but they control a pretty substantial amount of the global seed supply.
Yeah.
And with their seeds, it's basically a play ball or suffer severe consequences type deal.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with Monsanto. And it's gotten to the point where farmers have lost the choice on what to produce and how to produce it,
yeah.
Which are two of the key inputs in the economic cycle, right?
Yeah, well, that's been a long time coming, and that's a little bit of a longer story, but like how all those farmers got talked into being the dealers for the Monsanto version of these foods, I'll go into briefly, but there is a longer version of this. Basically, we started having trouble with yields way back in the 50s, 60s. The population was growing faster than we could produce foods. And traditionally, you know, you might pull, just to round numbers, you might pull about 60 bushels of corn out of an acre, for example.
Sure.
Now they're pulling out 180. Okay. So what, maybe the intentions were good originally. But the idea was we have to be able to feed the world, and we have to. And there was massive poverty in places that couldn't grow their own food, so it was seen as a kind of like a progressive thing, like food, America's going to feed the world. And there was this big, everybody was getting behind this idea that we have to increase yields to be able to not only take care of our own, but to provide more food and grain and everything for the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that those were all good intentions, but the result of that was we got out of balance with nature very quickly, right? Because we tripled the yield of what's coming out of that acre. Then you tripled the outtake of nutrients from that soil. It only makes sense, right? Inputs and outputs. That's how nature works. So it, all of a sudden, the soil started becoming bereft of nutrients. And the fertilizers had to become more and more and more powerful to be able to take up the slack. Those are chemicals. They don't actually return organic nutrient to the soil, so the soil gets wasted out more and more as you're tripling these yields. And then the next thing from that, after the fertilizer wasn't enough, the bugs started getting really bad. So then they had to have stronger and stronger pesticides. And the pesticides would decrease the nutrient uptake of the plants. So then we had to start adding anhydrous and ammonia into the soil, you know, to further add nutrient that the plants could use. And so we have this cocktail of chemicals that we call agriculture now.
Right.
Whereas it used to be we put a seed in the ground, the soil was good enough because we were in balance with nature. The soil was good enough. It would grow that plant and we would get a yield off of it. And not, you know, it's the same yield they've been getting for 1,000 years from that plant. And it was going to have to be good enough. And then we changed and we said, we have to become a different kind of system. We have to produce more. And then as we started producing more, you could see a basic economic cycle, right? As the supply goes way up, what happens? The price goes way down. So it became a lot harder for farmers to survive without producing that 180 bushels per acre.
Right.
So they got locked into this thing.
Well,
where
think
you,
about how enticing that
street.
Is, you know?
You can't go back, you know? You mm-hmm. can't go back then.
That's an easy sell from the Monsanto point of view. Yeah. We'll increase your yield. We'll triple it.
Yeah. And then the prices drop, so you end up making the same, after 10 years, you end up making the same amount off three times mm-hmm. the crop that you used to make off of a third of the crop when it wasn't robbing
the soil.
So what's
the net effect?
The net effect, yeah, exactly. The net effect is the farmer doesn't get ahead at all, but Monsanto does. Mm-hmm. Because now you have to come back and you got to buy their seed every year, you got to buy their
chemicals.
Super fertilizer, you got to buy their pesticides, you got to buy their herbicides, you got to buy... because they all work together, you know, and they're targeted so that it only works with that particular plant or seed or whatever. So you really don't have another option. And farmers get backed into these little corners where it's like, well, this is the only thing. I have to stay with this program. I can't go back to a natural, you know, farming approach because my yields will be a third of what they are now or
less. And the soil has been ruined.
And the soil's like dust.
So it's not good.
And it's blown off.
To use, you can't farm it any other way than the Roundup Ready way.
Yeah, so that's how farmers get there. You know, like there was no, it's not as if farmers sold out. You know, they were led down this path one gate at a time, and they're one-way gates. There's no way to go back that they can see. Some farms have, but, you know, it's not an easy.
It's not easy to get off that horse once you're on it.
Yeah, it's almost like an addict thing. It's almost like being addicted because you just need more and more of their stuff the longer you're on it. And you can't get it anywhere else. You got to keep going back to the same dealer. That's the way it feels to me. And farmers, you know, that I've talked to around here locally don't even feel passionate about what they grow anymore. They just feel like, you know, they're the operator, you know,
it's a process.
The guy running the machine or mm-hmm. working the land. But they're not really passionate about it. They're not like proud to stand next to their product at a market. They're just taking it to the grain elevator and like every other person is and trying to get a bigger yield than they did last year. I mean, that's basically the mode they're in. And I think that's, you know, it sucks. Like that's all I can come up with. It sucks because I would rather live in a place where farmers really love the food that they produce and are proud of it and want to stand next to it at the market and say, I grew this,
mm-hmm.
you know, and these guys that they don't have that anymore. At least the ones I know.
No, that's a lost time. Yeah. Now it's all monoculture. It yeah. used to be a farmer grew the crops that they needed to support their family and they sold the rest at a market. Well, now if you're growing nothing but one type of corn that isn't sweet corn, so you don't eat it. It goes into corn syrup or it goes into
yeah,
cattle feed.
Right.
Why, you know, what's there to be proud of?
Yeah.
It's not like, wow, I grew these beautiful vegetables. Here they are.
Right.
It's seed corn.
And that high fructose corn syrup, I mean, shit, we could almost do an episode on that. But most of the farmers growing corn are producing corn that's either going back into grains to feed cattle and chickens and so forth with, or it's going into high fructose corn syrup, into the production of the artificial sweetener that we use called high fructose corn syrup. So a lot of the corn is being grown for that now. And most of the corn being grown in the United States, I believe they cover this in the documentary Food Inc., is Monsanto corn. So it's genetically modified as well that they're putting into that sweetener that then goes into a ton, like everything on the shelf has HFCS in it. So that's
which was a market that was created. Now we can talk about this too. The whole high fructose corn syrup phenomenon was created to have a use for the surplus corn we were growing.
Yeah. All of a sudden we had too much corn.
We had too much corn because of these increased yields. We didn't have nothing to do with it. So let's make something out of it.
How did that ever happen when people were starving on the other side of the planet? How did we have a surplus? Exactly how does that occur?
It probably has something to do with the fact that the surplus corn we did have isn't the kind you can eat. I don't know if they don't make corn syrup. They probably make it out of some kind of corn that's not usable for food. Or we were just like, we got too much. We're going to either dump it in the ocean or we're going to find something to do with it, but we're not going to share it.
Yeah. I've read that in other blogs and so forth, though, that even today, that we produce a lot of food that rots and doesn't get used, and yet on the other side of the world, people are dying because they don't have food. I don't understand that. Being a globalized economy, you know, we, and globalized markets now, we ought to, there shouldn't be anything that just goes to waste, but I guess it does on a large scale sometimes. If there's not enough of a price to demand that they do anything else with it, it just sits there. That seems tragic.
It does seem tragic.
Anyway, I'm getting off the topic.
It seems criminal, actually.
Yeah. I'm getting off the topic, but you know, let's talk a little bit about Monsanto's history. How did they start? What was their product line originally?
Well, as we said earlier, it's actually a chemical company that masquerades as an agribusiness company,
right,
under that banner, as opposed to stating what they really are, which is a chemical company. And their first products that they were well known for were chemicals.
Saccharin.
And saccharin was, the first.
First.
One of the first, if not the first.
It was the first.
Chemicals that they came up with. And following that, they were responsible for some of the nastiest substances we've ever consumed here on Earth.
Right. And, well, following that, immediately after saccharin was Agent Orange. That was the next thing Monsanto produced, and their customer was the U.S. military. So that's when they really grew. But it lets you know a little something about them, because that's where their roots are, right? In producing saccharin, this artificial sweetener, which we now know causes all kinds of problems in people, and then Agent Orange, this terribly toxic thing. And then what was DDT in
DDT?
The 60s? DDT. You got anything on DDT you can read? I can do a wiki on it.
I can find it.
It's worth it, because this was used as a, like an insecticide, wasn't it?
Yeah, DDT.
But it was used.
DDT,
harmful.
I think, mostly was used to prevent malaria around the world from mosquitoes. Here we go. I got something on it right here. Monsanto began manufacturing DDT in 1944, along with some 15 other companies. This insecticide was much welcomed in the fight against malaria-transmitting mosquitoes.
It was an insecticide.
Due to DDT's toxicity, its use in the United States was banned in 1972.
Yeah.
In 77, Monsanto stopped producing PCBs.
77?
77.
All right.
United States Congress banned domestic production 2 years later. It also says here, in the 60s and 70s, Monsanto was the most important producer of Agent Orange. That you also touched on. So yeah, DDT, and then there's the PCBs, which
and
is
DDT
another thing.
DDT does not occur in nature. You know, it was produced in a laboratory, once again, outside of the ecology. I keep stressing that, because all of these things evolve together in one ecosystem. And when you create something from outside that ecosystem and insert it, you're altering the ecosystem itself, I think. So DDT is not natural, nor is Agent Orange or any of the other things that they've produced.
Agent Orange is a defoliant, which is a precursor, I'm sure, somewhere along the line to the Roundup glyphosate product.
Hmm.
But then there's also PCBs.
So DDT was hurting people. Like, it was showing up.
It was causing.
Wherever they used it on the fields, it was like the surrounding communities were all getting sick and stuff. So they finally...
Not from malaria, though, right? I mean, come on.
No, no, from the
We solved the problem, right? No more malaria.
Yeah.
But people are sick.
And then they finally, after like all these people were already sick, they finally had to go, okay, fine, it is harmful. And then the laws got passed, and then it got changed. But unfortunately, we seem to have to go through that kind of learning curve as a society. Like, we have to wait until thousands or tens of thousands of people are adversely affected before anybody believes that it's not a conspiracy theory that these things are happening.
What we've got to learn is the fact that these companies are not honest with us.
Right.
And they are beholden to their shareholders and nothing else. They're not beholden to the health and welfare of society.
That's it.
It's profit motive only. And they're not going to come out and tell us if something is wrong with their products or if it's harmful.
I think most people...
They've got no financial incentive to do so.
No, they don't.
It's risk analysis is what it is. What's the cleanup going to cost versus what will it cost us to tell us now?
Right. Or the lawsuits.
And it's all calculated.
Right.
They produced some of the most harmful toxins, you know, that's ever been produced. And that's one of the reasons.
Here's a good stat, man. Go ahead.
That right now, Monsanto is associated with 11 active Superfund sites, which are heavily polluted sites.
Oh, boy.
That we are cleaning up with our taxpayers all through the EPA.
Let's talk about that for a second.
That's 11 active Superfund sites and 20 archive sites.
Yeah. What is a Superfund site, Mike?
It is a highly toxic, contaminated area. A huge area. That the company... They left town and they left it, and it's basically a hazard to the surrounding community. So who has to fix it? Since the company who caused it's not going to fix it, we can't leave these toxic sites around. The government has to fix it, which means me and you pay for it. Is that in a nutshell?
Yeah. Let's back up. I want to just make it as simple as I can to make sure people don't miss this concept. A lot of people are talking about this idea these days that individuals are pulling on the tax system too much and blah, blah, blah. But these corporations pull on it unbelievably heavy. So here's an example of how they do. They polluted the shit out of their own area, like where their factory is and where they have runoff ponds and things like that, that they just basically to get the chemicals out of their facility and somewhere else.
They had to dump them somewhere.
Dump them somewhere. And they've got all kinds of like packaging and things that couldn't be disposed of and had to sit somewhere. So they sat out in the rain and whatever. So they made they cut all these corners, right? Just so that they could keep producing, and not worrying about the environmental impacts and not worrying about the toxicity that's draining into the rivers and not worrying about any of that stuff. And then it got so bad that it became an environmental disaster for the surrounding communities. And here's what Monsanto said, and this is not just Monsanto. All the corporations that are Superfund sites did this. Some of them are energy companies. You know, there are different ones. But here's what they did. They lobbied Congress and they said, listen, if we have to pay to clean up our mess, it's going to be so expensive that it's going to mean layoffs for us and like, oh man, we're going to have to shut down plants and that's going to hurt the economy. And this is what they do every time something's going to cost them a lot of money is they say, oh, well, we just want to keep people working. You know, we just want to keep it all going. We just want to keep the economy humming, baby. You know, and so we can't afford to clean this stuff up. If we do, then that's going to take money away that we would invest in this new factory we're going to build, 2,000 jobs, you know.
It's going to screw up the greater good for all.
And so they go to their congressman and they say, look, regulations weren't clear and some things got missed. And so now we've got this cesspool 50 miles around our facility and it's draining into everybody's water supplies and so forth. So we think it would be best if you guys just cleaned it up, government. We think it would be best if you just took care of it for us at taxpayer expense. Let's call them a Superfund site. Let's put a name on it that makes it sound somewhat positive. But what it is American taxpayers paying to go clean up the messes that corporations produced. These corporations are highly profitable entities.
And they can afford to clean their messes up.
They can clean their messes
or
up.
They but can go out of business.
You, the taxpayer, are subsidizing them for making their messes. And in the case of Monsanto, you're doing it for a company that actively puts things into your food that they know might be harmful. I can't say that they are because there's not enough definitive evidence for that yet, but that might be harmful. And then they're not allowing a public discussion about it. And you're paying for the cleanup of their factories. So, I mean, really, these things, that's what a Superfund site is. A Superfund is like a code word. But what it is we're paying for the cleanup that companies didn't do on their own. Otherwise, it's going to poison us and continue to poison us. That's pretty bad.
That is bad.
I think people...
You know, it's my opinion that if a business can't afford the expenses it incurs, then it goes out of business.
Why are we subsidizing them? We'll talk
a little bit about an economic theory here, but then the market adjusts to that producer leaving the market, period. If you can't pay your bills, don't pollute the earth.
That's an efficient
market. And I'm kind of hot about that because I watched a documentary on Hank Paulson last night.
Oh, God.
So I'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah, because we'll go off on a big spiraling fractal about Paulson. That dude, I got lots to say about that devil.
So that's another reason. So we're not just singling Monsanto out because we don't like the name.
Uh-uh.
It's the fact that they are the largest agribusiness company that is causing the problems that we're talking about.
Yeah.
So it's only fair that they be mentioned.
Yeah, so, you know, here's a stat on Monsanto. Approximately 70% of foods that are processed in any way in the U.S. now contain a genetically engineered, or GMO, ingredient. 70%. So that means if it's not a whole food, if it's a boxed food, a bagged food, it's
any kind of processed
frozen
food,
pizza, anything like that, anything that's processed in any way, 70% of those items have genetically engineered ingredients in it. Lest you believe that it's only a few little things in the grocery store and that you wouldn't really be concerned about it if you knew. 70%. And there's no labeling. So you have no idea that it's in there. You don't know that they've changed it. 70%. 7 out of 10 things that you buy that's processed.
That's pretty shocking. I had no idea it was that high.
Get people's attention. This is from Vanderbilt University.
I wonder does that include the produce you buy? Is most of that genetically modified too? Because I don't see why it wouldn't be.
Only if it's processed. Like if they run it through processing, then it is. But, you know, just if you just take some green beans and put them in a can, no, that's not processed. It has to be something that's put into either dry form, box form, you know, frozen form. Has to be like those bag meals that you buy, you know, one skillet meals. All that stuff is processed food.
Hmm.
Yeah, if it runs through a big plant and they
that goes back to if you're cooking for convenience all the time, you might not be doing yourself any favors.
Yeah, and I just want to say one thing while I'm thinking about it here is that the most recent thing that happened in the Monsanto sphere, it's relevant to this discussion we're having right now, is they just passed a, it has a legal name, but what everybody's calling it in the blogosphere is the Monsanto Protection Act, which is essentially your senators in the U.S. Congress just rushed through a bill that says that if you believe you are harmed in some way by either the chemicals that Monsanto is using or the genetically modified foods, you no longer have the legal right to sue them.
Well, that's a handy pet
to
have.
You cannot sue them. If all of a sudden you get sick, or if a whole community gets sick from something that Monsanto grew, and that you consumed, you do not have the right to sue them. Your senators just took that away from
you. How does that work?
Your senators felt that it was in the best interest of the corporation who produces the largest percentage of the food supply for them to protect that company in order to protect the food supply in the name of national security. That's the cover story for what that's like what they're all standing behind for why they pushed it through. What it really is Monsanto pours huge amounts of money into their reelection campaigns. That one in California you just referenced that Monsanto defeated, Californians,
Prop 37,
they overwhelmingly voted to have labeling, right? So then it goes to court, and Monsanto spends $17.1 million defeating it, despite public opinion wanting the labels. So they beat public opinion in California with $17 million.
Money talks.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the big reasons why they're able to get away with all the things that they're able to get away with is, we talk a lot about the revolving door between business, the corporate world, and politics.
Yeah.
And there's been quite a few high-ranking government people who have gone to work you know, for Monsanto, either after their careers or they worked for Monsanto and then went into government. So they have a lot of influence, not only through that, through their employees and those relationships there, but they also spend an enormous amount of money lobbying our lawmakers.
Yeah.
To get what they want.
Writing some of their own legislation, even.
Yeah. How does that work? A company can write its own legislation.
Because we're not paying attention.
That tells you who's buying who. Now, what can we do as private citizens against something like that? There's not a whole lot we can do.
Well, not as individuals, but this is the thing we always talk about on this show. Like, none of us has, it's like as if we all have this little LED light, right? And none of us has the power to change these things on our own. But if we all light those lights at the same time, you could see it from space. You know what I mean? That's the visual I want to give people. Because, or you could use voices, like a voice of one person. You can barely hear it a mile away, right? No matter how loud they're yelling. But if you have the voices of hundreds of thousands of people or millions of people all in the same chorus at the same time, that thunder will shake mountains. And I think, you know, that's what people have to understand, is that we have to move as a unit. We have to move as a single group of people. That's why they always talk about this 99% concept.
The power of the horde, you know.
Occupy movement, which is something I support. But it's like this idea, it's this mental concept that you have to start to think like the 99%, because really we all are in the same boat. 99% of us want the same things, and we want the same transparency and accountability in government, and we want, you know, peace and good food, and like we want a place where our kids can do a little bit better than we did, and
it's, we want those things promised in the Declaration, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's all.
The 99% wants the same things. They spend a lot of money, and by they I mean lobbyists and corporations, and you know,
those with money.
Super PACs like America for America and all those things. You know what I mean? Like, you have no idea what they're for, and you have no idea what they're doing behind the scenes. But there's a lot of that going on, and that affects our perceptions. They put this stuff on TV ads. They put it in our newspapers. They pay journalists to write stories that are favorable to what the perception they want to give, and they pump it through the mass media outlets so that they can control the story. This is true, people, and like that affects us. That makes us look at these issues differently, and that makes us start to look at each other as the problem. Oh, it's those guys over there that are the problem, and they're over there going, yeah, it's them guys over there that are the problem. We get caught up in that mindset because we get led that way, almost like leading by the nose, you know. We get led that way, whereas if we tune out of all that and we just start doing our own research and start having our own conversations, you know, person to person and person to group and group to group, we can start to light those lights and make those changes just one at a time. And that's how we win. We can't win on our own, but we can win as one.
And I think it's important for us to talk about these things to educate people. I mean, Monsanto, I knew very little about it until I started researching it just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
It's not something that you're going to go out and you're not going to find it on your own.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, unless you know someone that's passionate about these things.
But I didn't know who they were. Yeah. For 5 years ago or something, somebody was railing against them at a rally or something I was at, and I was like, who is that? I don't even know what they did.
And we live in a state. We live in a state that used to have a town called Monsanto, because it was a big factory there. I don't know what they made or what, but it was so big they named the town after it. Now it's named something else.
I didn't know that.
Yep, now you do.
Well, isn't that a neat little factoid?
Do we got a minute? I want to reiterate the fact, illustrate the point of this revolving door between corporations and politics. I've got a list of some people here who have used that door.
Oh, good.
I just want to mention a few.
Good. Because we shouldn't glance over that. Before you do, I just want to say, you know, this is not just the agribusiness industry. This is in energy. This is in pharmaceuticals. Yeah, pharma's oil. Another big one. Oil, energy. It's in agriculture. It's in all the really big profitable. It's in defense. That's another.
Defense is another big one. That's
another thing on the military industrial complex and all that. But that is an industry in the United States. War is an industry.
It is.
It's an enormous,
it's a profitable
industry.
When
you look at our GDP, it's a huge part of our GDP. I saw a statistic the other day Now, I'm not going to go into that whole thing. We'll get off on a tangent, but I'll save that for another episode. But, you know, we should just be aware that all these guys know that if the voters throw them out, they're going to make 5-10 times as much money in the industry that's bought them and that paid for their service in Congress, you know, and that they kept putting them back in office through donations and making sure that they would win, because 96% of the time, the candidate with the most money wins in our system because they can control the story on media. That's true. That's a true statistic. So money wins. People need to understand that it's like, even if you have the best ideas in the world, you'll get inundated by negative ads and end up losing the race anyway. So money wins. And they buy these guys. And if they want to keep their seat, they have to do what the corporations that got them there want. And then if they start to have dropping poll numbers and they're starting to see, like, I got an election coming up in 2 years, like, what am I going to do? The answer the corporations give them is, well, hey, listen, if you don't pull it out, we've got a position for you. You know, we've got a VP, a regional VP, or we need you to do some lobbying on our behalf. And so they know they're going to make 3 or 4 or 5 times as much as they ever made in Congress working in the private sector by the same people that bought them. This is out in the open.
So there's a
dual
incentive.
Mike's going to give you examples of it. And yet, we, like, as a nation, we have not yet felt the need to put an end to that, because I see that as open corruption.
It's open. It's called, I believe they call that collusion in court.
Yeah.
You know, it's unreal.
And then
what do those
congressmen do, or those senators do? They go out and raise money. They lobby on behalf of the company and raise money and try to buy politicians in order to do the same thing that lobbyists did to them while they were there. And they're schooled on the game now because they saw it from the inside and they're seeing it from the outside, you know?
Yep.
So anyway, you got some examples of those?
Mm-hmm. Here's some people. We'll start with Mr. Earl H. Harbinson Jr. Served with the Central Intelligence Agency for 18 years, rising to the rank of deputy director. After which he had a career at Monsanto, rising to the roles of president, chief operating officer, and director of Monsanto.
Wow, that's CIA to Monsanto? That's a weird jump.
Which he held from 86 to 93. Michael A. Friedman, MD, was senior vice president of research and development, medical and public policy for Pharmacia, and later served as FDA deputy commissioner. Linda J. Fisher was an assistant administrator at the United States Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, before she was a vice president at Monsanto from 95 to 2000. In 2001, Fisher became the deputy administrator of the EPA.
Oh, of the EPA.
That's a nice one to have.
Environmental Protection Agency.
When you're a polluter.
Yeah. That's convenient to have, isn't it? I didn't see any pollution. See no evil.
Yeah, right.
You knew evil.
Oh, Monsanto, we'll let you slide this
it's
time.
It's like, I'm the regulator now. I don't see shit.
Michael R. Taylor was an assistant to the Food and Drug Administration Commissioner before working as an attorney for King & Spalding, a private sector law firm that represented Monsanto among other clients. He later served as deputy commissioner for policy to the FDA on food safety between 91 and 94, during which time the FDA approved RBST, which is that bovine hormone. He was accused of conflict of interest, but a federal investigation cleared him. Following his tenure at the FDA, Taylor returned to Monsanto as vice president for public policy. On July 7, 2009, Taylor entered government as senior advisor to the commissioner of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for the Obama administration. Boy, he came and went like 3 times. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas worked as attorney for Monsanto in the 70s. Thomas wrote the majority opinion in the 2001 Supreme Court decision, JEM Ag Supply Inc. versus Pioneer Hybrid International Inc., which is part of Monsanto, which found that newly developed plant breeds are patentable under the general utility patent laws of the United States. Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. So just to reiterate, Supreme Court Justice, top court in the land, Clarence Thomas, was a Monsanto lawyer at one time. He represented them in, I think, several cases. And then, as the Supreme Court justice wrote the majority opinion on a key Monsanto case, one in which they needed favorable, favorable attention by the court, and got it. How about that?
This last one is pretty impressive, too. William D. Ruckelshaus served as the first head of the EPA in 1970, was subsequently acting director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and then Deputy Attorney General of the United States. From 83 to 85, he returned as EPA administrator. After leaving government, he joined the board of directors of Monsanto.
Yeah.
He is currently retired from that board. Between serving for Gerald Ford and George W. Bush, former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld was chairman and chief executive officer of G.D. Searle & Company, a pharmaceutical company which produced aspartame, apparently while working on an ulcer drug. Monsanto bought the company in 85 and rebranded aspartame as NutraSweet. Rumsfeld's stock and options in Searle were $12 million U.S. dollars at the time of the transaction.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. There was some in there I didn't know about.
Yep.
So that gives you an insight. That's hard proof of the collusion, corruption, whatever you want to call it, between government and politics.
Yeah, I think people kind of know. I mean, we're given specific examples because we want people to know there's some meat behind what we're saying. But I think most people, right when we started that conversation, probably already knew there's collusion between industry and the regulators are bought and so on. So I think, you know, they're probably thinking like, well, what can we do? You know, what can we do to change it? And I think the main thing is to get talking, like not only get yourself educated before you kind of become an activist about it, but like you have to learn the basics about what has been done and a little bit about the history. But then you got to get loud, meaning you got to start writing your congressman. You got to start going to public appearances of the public officials that are making decisions in these areas and asking them questions.
Which you may feel like doing once you find out what what's happening to you and what these companies are doing to us.
The more people actually take an active part in the democracy in any way that they feel comfortable, whether that's writing letters, whether that's going to a protest like we did in St. Louis, mm-hmm. whether that's showing up at catching these politicians where they don't expect to be caught, because they often don't want to go public with their positions on these things. Mm-mm. They know that they're doing something that the public won't necessarily like, so they just stay real quiet about it. But if we go out to these events where they're going to be and ask them questions in front of cameras and hold them accountable, you know, that stuff is going to get out to YouTube. It's going to get out to other outlets, even if the mainstream media doesn't pick it up. And that's going to start to affect the candidate. It's going to make them believe that these things can't be behind the scenes anymore. It's going to make them start to see that the story isn't being controlled anymore, and that it is going to affect them politically if they don't do the right thing for human beings. You know, that's all we're talking about here is like, let's embrace health and let's err on the side of caution instead of just throwing this stuff out into the market, and which it already is and has been for 20 years, but is really picked up the pace recently. Instead of that, let's have a discussion about it. Let's err on the side of caution. Let's label it. Let's let the consumer choose. I don't think that's an unreasonable position, right?
I don't either.
Whether you believe Monsanto's a devil or not, because a lot of people do, man. You know, at this rally, Mike and I ran into a lot of, different kind of stripes of folks. And it's good to see that. You know, we need variety in our culture. But at the same time, there's a lot of people like us who understand the basics and want to do something. And then there's a lot of radicals. Like, there was a lot of radicals out there who have a little bit more of an anarchistic view on things. And they seem to look at it like it's time to get, you know, serious about these things. And I think the reason they feel that way is because we're not making very many gains in this area. and that the corporations actually end up winning because they can outspend us, you know, 1,000 to 1.
Right.
Not only in elections, but just on the information war. So we got to start talking to each other. We got to start educating ourselves. We got to start raising our voices and sort of, you know, like getting other people up to speed on some of these things. Even though it's not fun to talk about, even though, you know, it'd be easier to watch The Voice or American Idol and just zone out, you know, like we actually got to start taking an active role in our democracy. And whatever people are comfortable doing in that regard is what they should do, because it's like every little voice counts. And so what can you do? No, of course, as an individual, you can't change the world. Of course, as an individual, you can't, you know, empty the ocean. But as a group, we can really start to change this if people just do a little.
All we got
to
do
millions of people do a little, it can work.
That's right.
And that's where the hope is. That's where the positive side of this is that we can do it and we can have healthy food, but we just have to, everybody's got to do a little. And you can't just wait for the leaders to do it. You can't wait for just the activist types.
Right, because there's not enough of them.
Not enough.
It requires the horde to shake the system.
And that's where these radical guys come from, because we don't make a lot of progress because there isn't a cacophony of voices. You know, there isn't this huge sort of revolt against these things happening, and so money wins yet again. And I think if more people were involved, we'd have fewer radicals. They would be drowned out in the mix of the middle.
Yeah.
And I think the middle
it would be one part of the big bell curve.
The middle is what's missing from this, and that's what we're trying to do by covering some of these and hopefully planting a seed for somebody so they can go out and do a little bit more research on their own as well.
Right. And this is one issue, I mean, to come together on. But if we come together on one issue, then we come together on all issues that affect us. And when we see that this affects us all, and it's okay for us to band together and come together.
Yeah.
You know, then this is one issue. Then the next issue that comes up that we don't like, we can come together on that too.
Yep.
And we've already got that situated. This is one thing, you know, and it's important to us because, you know, the end product, the genetically modified foods that we eat and the health effects, that's one issue of it. But there's a whole other issue to Monsanto that we haven't talked about yet, and that's the fact that they basically bully farmers into partaking in their program.
They do.
And there are consequences if they don't play ball.
It's not an exaggeration. They really do. For example, they don't allow them to keep their legacy seeds, their heirloom, and they don't allow them to, as farmers have done for hundreds of years, you know, normally you raise your crop, you harvest, and then you keep 15 or 20% of your crop to plant next year. And that way you don't have to go and buy the seeds from a seed company. You become self-sustaining.
Cuts
right?
down your cost.
Well, Monsanto is in the process and to a large degree in the United States has already eliminated that. Because if you use the Monsanto seed, you're not able to keep a portion of your crop next year. And you're not able to keep your legacy seeds either. So you have to actually burn them or have somebody dispose of them. And if they catch you keeping a percentage of the yield from the previous year to plant the next year, they will sue you. And they sue so intensely that they'll run you out of business. So it's punitive, too. It's not as if they just catch them and then say, okay, give us the seeds. No, they try to run them out of
existence. They try to destroy the little farmer.
To destroy the farmer for
not playing ball.
Daring to go against the ag cartel, which Monsanto is the head of. You know, and I use that term. I don't think it's too strong, personally, because that's what they do. They rule by intimidation in this industry. And because they have the support of our government in many respects, the farmers don't have a chance. And I think we need to tip the scales back to where our government is in support of the farmers first and not the corporations. The corporations
exactly.
can get their voices heard as well. They have a place at the table in our democracy, but it cannot be the primary position of influence over our representatives. It has to be, you know, third or fourth, like down the line. And people have to be number one, that we are the constituency. We are the taxpaying citizens. The government was created to represent our values and interests, and they're not looking at us first. They're still looking at the corporations.
So how do
first.
They look at us first? We make it well known to our politicians that if they don't do what we want, because they work for us, then they're fired. They don't get reelected. That's what we've got to do.
Yeah.
Because that's what Monsanto and the other corporations are doing. They're ensuring that they get elected by spending the money to for this, that, or the other thing, their campaigns. And if our votes count, Monsanto can't place 50,000 votes for a politician. Only we can.
Yeah.
And if there's something we don't like, we tell our congressmen, we tell our senators, you vote for this, we're not going to vote for you.
Yeah. And it's got to
And then
actually
we got to
happen.
Not do it.
It's
when
gotta
when it happens,
happen,
we've got to actually
right.
vote them out of office.
Yeah, I think the problem is, though, doesn't it, you tell me what you think, but like it's like these guys do these things, but then they only do it when they know their election is a year and a half, 2 years away, off, you know, so that they know their safe distance in terms of memory for the voter. And so by the time the election actually comes around, nobody really remembers that they did these things. Nobody has the retention that they did things that were that they really didn't like. And what they do remember is like whatever ads they saw.
Mm-hmm.
I think the average voter, it's like whatever ads you saw in the last month and a half before the election are more likely to have sway over which way you pull that lever than what somebody did a year ago or 2 years ago, right? And so there has to be this lengthening of the memory of the voter somehow. And maybe
well, yeah,
we can
which
get
requires, it requires the voter to have a little bit more invested in the political process.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it means more time, which is the thing that everybody is going to say they don't have, right? Because you have to actually spend time to read a little bit or to write something, or to have conversations about these things, or to watch a documentary, or to go to a march, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody says, I don't have time. I'm barely surviving now. You know, like, how am I going to go do these things as well?
Yeah.
And so we don't. And then what happens is we look at whatever political ads are around before.
Because we haven't done our research. So the 2 months before the election, when the ads run, we got to go, oh, we got to do our homework. Let's watch these ads.
I think it's fair to say we're a fairly uneducated population when we go to vote, right?
I think so.
Like Jay Leno just did
Let's be honest. How much do we really know about what our politicians do? You hear about a small percentage of what the Hill does on the news. That's it. The rest is done. Unless you watch C-SPAN all day, every day, you don't know all the little things that go through Congress.
Mm-hmm.
It would require, it would require that kind of investment of time.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, you've got to figure out what happened between the headlines.
I think people just like watch their nightly news or whatever, or you know, they check their newspaper for whatever headlines jump out, and those are all mass media sources. They're all corporate owned. Newspapers are corporate-owned. The networks are corporate-owned. They're not only corporations themselves, but they're funded through ads that corporations pay them. So it's corporation squared.
It's a cycle.
You know, and they're not giving you the full story. They're giving you a filtered version of the news, you know.
Perfect example of that. Oh, go ahead.
So people got to tune that out if they want to start to hear a little bit of the different story, if they want to start to hear a little bit if they're surprised at some of these things we're saying, and they think, well, gosh, how can that be so? And I didn't hear about it. It's because of the news sources that you are tuning into. All of this stuff, like the Vanderbilt University, all these things are sourced. All these things, all these court cases, all these examples we give are mm-hmm. real facts, and it's all out there. It's all public information, but you have to look for it. Nobody's going to bring
news.
It to you. Because nobody's got an incentive to.
Right, like the Monsanto Protection Act. That's a perfect example of what we have no idea what our lawmakers are doing. I'm sure at some point, at least a percentage of us would have said, hey, let's not do this. Let's stand up against this. I had no idea it was passing until it was already passed.
I do. I think if people actually had these conversations, you know, just on their own, and they had the facts in front of them, they would arrive at the same place we are. But that doesn't really occur. Those conversations don't really occur en masse. So people are going to have to start tuning into this stuff. And I know everybody's busy. You know, I don't have the answer for that. I know everybody's like trying to make it all click together just as it is. And it's a tough time in America as it is. So it's hard to put away time for this. But, you know, if you actually look at your week or your month, you can probably find some areas in there that aren't adding anything to your life, but that, that you enjoy doing, and you might be able to dip into one of those areas a little bit.
For instance, you know, on your commute to and from work, you could listen to the Delta 9 radio program, and you could get some news that you're not going to hear on CNN.
Yeah.
And you get to hear our voices, too.
Because we got RSS feeds. You can listen on your phone wherever you are. If you've got a commute every week somewhere and you got to sit in an airport for an hour, it'd be a good time to tune us in. If you got a commute in your car, like Mike said, or, you know, maybe turn off the TV and take programs that are entertaining but don't serve any kind of productive or positive purpose in your life. Or programs that don't make you feel good, you know, and replace those with times when you could watch documentaries on a topic that you like. They're all over, I mean, on the web. And you can pick the topic, you can pick the issue. It doesn't have to be Monsanto, it doesn't have to be food safety. But, like, my whole thing is just trying to get people to become, to gain an appetite for information again. Like we all had when we were kids, and then we started learning in school, a lot of us started feeling like that sucked because the kind of information that they brought us was not enjoyable and didn't seem relevant to our lives. So a lot of us tuned out of those sources. We got to become hungry for information again, but be our own...
The right information.
Yeah, be our own divining rods for finding that information.
You know, I would think, and I could be way off base here, but the more people realize and find out, you know, they're not getting the whole story, and that, you know, the government's doesn't have their best interest in heart when we're talking about certain things. I think the more that they realize that, the more they would have to be inspired to get more information on their own. Because I generally want to know what's going on.
Here's some examples of companies that use genetically modified ingredients. Kellogg's, Kashi. Which is the nature, you know, green sub-label of Kellogg's that you think is all natural. Kashi.
Hmm.
Coca-Cola, Kraft, Nabisco, McDonald's, Frito-Lay. You knew McDonald's. I mean, come on. Like, you'd be surprised McDonald's and Taco Bell are on here. Kraft, Nabisco, Frito-Lay, General Mills, Quaker Oats, Procter & Gamble, Nestle, Safeway, Campbell Soup, and of course, Walmart.
That's a you go, pretty large cross section of our entire
you go GMO
available choices.
Yeah, unfortunately. So, what are we really advocating on this subject, Mike? We're not advocating shut Monsanto down. We're not advocating that they should be, you know, regulated into non-existence. We're not regulating anything so dramatic.
Transparency. We want transparency.
Yeah,
we want to know that the products that they put into our society, whether it's through food or it's a chemical, we want to know that they're safe.
Yeah, and that was the main driving objective behind the march, was labeling. So just so people know, like, all of this other stuff is surrounding facts, and it's important to know some of this stuff, but what we're really lobbying for is transparency, labeling, so that when you go buy a product, you get to choose. Oh, I've got this product here, which has, a genetically modified ingredient, and it's this ingredient, and it's this much of the product. And this one doesn't. This one's $3, and this one's $3.55. Is it worth it to me to pay the extra 55 cents to not have the genetically modified ingredient? I think we should have that choice.
We should have that choice.
That's really all the main thing that I'm lobbying for. And Monsanto's even sued the grocery chains that took it upon themselves to say, you know, we want our buyer, our purchasers and our customers to know, and so that they can have the decision. Monsanto sued them so that they couldn't even have the right to tell their own customers about it. It's like, That's way over the line, in my opinion. I think if a company wants to tell its customers that some product has been changed, they should be able to do it. If states want to tell, they should be able to do it. And there are states that are fighting for labeling laws, and some of them have them already, but Illinois does not. In fact, they're going in the other direction in Illinois right now. They're moving more towards no labels, and locking that down so that nobody else can come in and change it. So you know, check your state and see where you fall on that map, because you may have labeling or you may not, and we don't have a map that could easily. I'll look for one, and if I can find it, I'll put it in. But we don't have a map that could easily show you who's got it and who doesn't. Yep. Labeling, that's all we're saying.
And the labeling's important, like you said, so we have that choice. And if the consumer looks at those labels and says, this has got GMO and this doesn't, I'm going to choose the one that doesn't for whatever reason, because their education level says that I don't want GMO foods, they should have that choice. And yes, that's an economic disadvantage to Monsanto if someone's making that choice, but that forces them to come out with the transparency and the studies and to study the stuff and to show us that it's safe.
Right.
If they did that and everybody said, okay, it's been proven now that there's no health, you know, no negative health effects from GMO foods, then that decision becomes a matter of price alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the job of that company, to prove to us that their products are safe. And then that doesn't become part of the issue.
I look at it like, kind of like PCBs. You know, remember those plastics? All those companies had plastics that released PCBs. And there was a long time during which there was a debate as to whether or not PCBs were in fact harmful. We now know that they are extremely harmful and can cause birth defects and can cause cancers and all kinds of bad stuff. The PCBs, I can't tell you, I'm not a doctor, but they do bad shit. We know that now. But for a while it was debatable. And as soon as it became debatable, what happened is retail chains started to label which ones had the type of plastic that produced the PCBs. So there were only certain ones, like you had to pick up the bottle and you could look on the bottom, and if it had an 8 or a 5 or whatever, that had PCBs in it. This is like the Monsanto issue, because those were only visible to consumers because the companies started to label them themselves. If Dow Chemical or whoever had come through and sued those companies so that they couldn't tell their consumers that harmful things were in the plastics they sold, then none of us would have known. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening with food. Like, we don't even get to know.
And what we're at risk of in that case is, a generation from now, we find out that there's a hell of a lot more cancer, there's more diabetes, yeah, there's more this and that.
And it'll be a big mystery where it all came from.
And it'll be contributed back to this unstudied food.
Yeah.
And then, who pays for that?
Well, it plays right into the healthcare thing, right?
Right.
We have 8 times as expensive healthcare as any other industrial company. Could it, or country, could it be because we have so many toxins going into our food? Could it be because we have so many toxins in our air? Could it be
our
because
food is not nearly
water?
As healthy as it should be?
I mean, isn't that possible too? Could it be because of the way we eat compared to the rest of the world? And could that come into play in terms of our health care? I mean,
sure,
these are
definitely.
The inputs. This is the stuff.
Without
that
a doubt,
we
our
eat.
Food has a lot to do with how sick we are.
Yeah.
You know?
And there's like upticks in so many of those diseases now. It makes you wonder.
And like you said, allergies, those are huge.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Food allergies are
big. You know, it's
now.
Like you
everybody's
walk into a classroom
to
with a peanut in your pocket and kids
forget
start
it.
Dying, dude.
I know.
It's like, what in the hell?
And seafood allergies, and like everybody's got an allergy now, and it seems like everybody's got asthma and hay fever. Everybody's got. There wasn't that much.
There's a
prevalence.
Higher level of dependence on the medical industry and pharmaceuticals.
Isn't it interesting how
everybody's got something?
As our air gets dirtier and dirtier, a higher and higher percentage of the population has asthma. Right? Which makes you think it's a condition in that person, not the inputs going into that person, the air itself. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with the food. Like, we're going to have all these things that come out of it, and then we're not going to be able to trace it back, and everybody's just going to go, it's a big mystery why health went to shit.
30 years from now, after it's been studied on us from eating this food for 30 years, and we find out, oh yeah, by the way, that causes cancer, and it causes this, and your ear falls off.
Yeah,
we find out all these things. What
like
happens?
DDT.
What happens to Monsanto? It's another DDT.
Yeah,
it's one more Superfund site. That's it. They walk away with maybe a slap on the wrist, And the rest of us are ill.
And then they change the company name, you know. It's
risk analysis from a corporate point of view.
Right.
And it's easier, it's cheaper in the long run to clean up the mess.
Yeah, let's not find out 30 years from now. Let's err on the side of caution now and make them label it and let the consumers decide. And then watch what'll happen. 80% of consumers will pick the clean food.
That's why we as consumers have got to come together. Exactly.
Because if they did, the consumers would choose against the manipulations they've been making to our food. And that's why they don't want to give you a choice.
And that's why they spend it. I mean, it must be a big enough threat to them to where it's better for them to spend millions of dollars a year, tens of millions of dollars a year to keep that from happening.
It's hard not to come back from one of those rallies a little fired up, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hear my voice throughout because I have, you know, the headphones, and I hear the viewers probably hear the agitated tone that I have, and I just say, I guess I want to just convey to everybody that it's difficult to go to a rally like that and get a lot of education from a lot of people on the different aspects of this thing, and these are the people. The same people that are willing to drive somewhere and spend a day going to a rally are the ones that spend a lot of time educating themselves on this stuff. So we learned a lot, and it's hard to come back from all of that and just not be really amped up about it. Like, I almost recommend it for people who want to be more involved in some sort of I hesitate to even use the word activism, but in some, they want to have a role in changing society, but they don't really know how to get motivated to do it. Go to one of these things. Like, we didn't know a soul. It was a rally that was out of town for us. We had to travel 3 hours there and 3 hours back, and with the other links in our transportation methods, it actually added more. So we probably spent 8 hours traveling, you know, and then we were there, and it turns you into more of a motivated person on this subject, because when you know, you care. Like, as soon as you start to understand these things more, you can put it together inside your head, and then you're like, wow, I know now what I should be doing, and I know what things I could bring up in a conversation about it, and things that I could do to maybe have a small impact in my little corner of the world. It's hard not to go to something like that and see so many people that are so energetic about a subject and not come back with a little bit of that energy. So I just want to say that for this, you know, it feels like it's been kind of a intense litany of stuff that we've been going through, but I just want to say to people that's where it's all come from.
It inspires you to go to the next one.
Yeah, it does.
You've been to one. Even though we spent more time in transit than we did at the event.
Yeah, but that was okay.
It was worth going to, and it was, I mean,
gave us a lot of time.
Ironically,
to talk.
Somehow we ran into another group from our town.
Yeah, we did. Which was weird. I didn't think we'd run into anybody down. We're going to hook up with those guys, too. We don't want to forget. I forgot the name of the business here in town, but I guess that would only be relevant to our local, anybody local anyway. So, but we're going to, I'd say we ran into people there from Peoria, let's see, Springfield, Alton, St. Louis, all of the little suburbs that surround St. Louis, definitely. But there were people from Indiana. There were people from one person I saw from Iowa.
There was a band from Hawaii.
Let's talk about them. Wookie Foot. I'm going to put it on your video feed.
The band was Wookie Foot. We couldn't make their show. They had a show the night following the march later that evening, but we had to catch our train.
I put that up on the video feed because it's a download spot for one of their songs, wookiefoot.com/junkfood.
You actually checked the music out. What'd you think?
I did check it out, and the junk food is about the Monsanto issue in particular, but Wookie Foot was in St. Louis for this, and then they did a concert over at the Cherokee, 2720 Cherokee. Well, it doesn't say. It must have been a bar. I think it was a bar or something. But they went and played that night because that was the world headquarters of Monsanto, so they flew in to be a part of that protest, and then they played a show later on. So Wookie Foot, and this is a free download at that site for the song Junk Food, but at that same site, WookieFoot.com, you can listen to their album, which I thought was pretty decent. A lot of variety in there. Like, there's a little bit of kind of reggae-ish stuff, and there's a little bit of electronica, you know, sounded a little bit like Bass Nectar, had some wah wah, had that kind of electronic thing going on in the background, you know. And they're mixing different musical genres together. And then one of them, my favorite song on that album was Just Visiting. So that's one I would recommend if you guys go to the website and check it out.
I know I'm going to check it out.
Just Visiting. And that's a band that a lot of lyrics are at least abstractly about issues that they want people to care about as well. But it's not like, it's not heavy. It's definitely easy. I'd say easy. Easy listening is not the right term, but it's like energetic music. There's a whole big variety, and it's even, there's parts of it that sound a little bit like Fish. Part of it sound like the Crystal Method. There's parts of it that sound like Radiohead. There's parts of it sound like Bass Nectar. There's parts of it that sound like Marley. Did I say that already?
Wow. That's awesome.
So, something worth checking
pretty
out.
Pretty good broad spectrum there.
Yeah. I might throw a song in by them at the end of the film, too, because the Junk Food song is a free download, and it's free to share. So I might stick that in on the trail of our audio and video here.
This will be a good one to do it on.
So for the podcast and at least one of the videos out on YouTube, it'll be on the last one.
Right on. So if you want more information about what we're talking about here, we didn't cover everything in depth.
It's a big topic.
It's a big topic, but there's some good resources if you go to our website under the media tab.
Yeah.
There's some documentaries that we've put there.
Yep.
For you to watch. And they're real in depth, and they'll tell you everything you need to know about this from a number of different angles. What they're doing to the food, what they're doing to the farmers, it's all on there.
Yep.
I definitely encourage you to head over to our website, hit the media tab, scroll down to Monsanto and see those videos.
Yeah, and we also have playlists on the YouTube channel. So I'll start one for Monsanto because we don't have that yet. Or I'll start one for clean food or something like that. But we already have a few of them out there that are subjects that we think are worth your time and attention to. So if you want to, and they're not our videos, we're linking to other people's videos that we think have some merit.
Mm-hmm.
So there's playlists down there, and they're arranged by subject if you want to check any of that stuff out as well.
And the thing about the documentaries that's good, and what I liked about them, was it actually gives real world examples of farmers who are fighting this and you know, the in-depth reasons of why this is an issue.
Yeah.
And it covers so many things. There's so many people involved that it affects, that it's good to get the whole picture through those documentaries. You got anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I did have a second ago. Let me think. I want to solicit our users. That's not the right word. Just listeners. Should we call them listeners? Audience. I want to solicit feedback from our audience, which we're still building, and we're still trying to get our numbers up so that we're getting distributed a little bit more, and we're still playing with format. So we want a little bit of feedback from the people that are checking us out. If you would do us a kindness and leave us a comment, if you have any input on how we go about doing these shows, how we organize them, the things that you get out of it, the things that you'd like to see out of it, if you'd like to see us do something a little bit different. One of the things we're thinking about doing next is maybe venturing into, you know, balancing all of these serious conversations with maybe putting a few videos out there that are of a little bit lighter nature. So Mike and I just started talking today about maybe doing some comedy videos, comedy skits, or playing around with some animation a little bit to try to make getting some of these points across a little bit more digestible.
Yeah, lighter man.
We want to have a mix of content. We don't just always want to be having the serious political conversations, but you know,
believe it or not, we're fun dudes.
It's important to do that, but we don't want to just be doing that. So we're thinking about doing that, and if you guys are interested in seeing that, let us know. If you're interested in hearing some of Mike's original music, You know, let us know, because Mike's got, what'd you say, dozens or hundreds of songs that you've worked on over the years?
I'd say dozens now. We have hundreds.
Yeah, over the years, they tend to like...
But in digital format, we've got dozens.
So...
The rest is archived to tape.
You know, you hear some of it on our roll-in and roll-out on the podcast, on the audio podcast, and I think on some of the videos we have those roll-ins of music, and that's Mike's stuff. And then I have paintings and art and stuff like that if you guys are interested in seeing more of that. But I'm probably more interested in hearing what they think about formatting. You know, like, are the videos too long enough, not long enough?
Yeah, we want your feedback. We need your feedback.
Yeah, do you like the feel of the show?
That's how you can immediately become involved.
Yeah, we want that. It sounds cheesy, but we actually want or it sounds cliche, but we actually want the users to be a part of the channel, the listeners, the content consumers, however you want to put it. We want you guys to have a part in how this thing evolves. So if you're a part of it this early, you know, let us know what you think about us and what you think we might do a little different. We appreciate the feedback.
Right on. And again, we thank you for listening. For more information on this topic and the other topics we've discussed to date, visit www.delta9radio.com. Remember to spell out the 9 in the website only. You can access our videos at youtube.com/delta9radio. Our full-length podcasts are available from Podomatic at delta9radio.podomatic.com.
Yep.
For our full podcast archive, visit www.delta9radio.com/podcasts. And while you're there, be sure to get your daily cup of Karma coffee, and don't forget to stock up on the latest Delta 9 radio gear. And as always, we thank you.